Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the regular meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, the La Hutton Region. My name is Jack Clark, and I'm from Apple Valley, and I serve as the board's chair. I want to thank the members of the public for coming to our meeting. We do a better job when you participate with the issues that come before us. At this time, I would like to introduce the other members of the regional board. On my far right is Dr. Amy Horn from Truckee. Next to her is Mr. Peter Pumphrey from Bishop. Next to me, I have Don Jardine from Markerville as our vice chair, and Eric Sandell from Truckee. Our executive officer is Harold Singer. Mr. Singer, would you please introduce staff?
Yes, thank you. Can everybody in the back of the room hear okay? Okay. Sort of not too good over there in the corner. All right. I guess we should then try to all speak up and project. I don't know if it's going to be better here in the middle than maybe it's a there's a dead spot over there in the corner from a sound perspective. So
chairs over here.
Yeah.
If we run out of chairs, we got room to put another aisle on the side over here.
I guess I would say if anybody's having some trouble hearing, if you would just raise your hand or let us know, you know, by some physical signal as opposed to interrupting us. Let us know. We'll try to enunciate and speak up more. So thank you. I want to introduce Amber White. Amber is the board secretary for today, and this will be her last meeting doing the board secretary job, in that we have hired a new board secretary with Sue Genera. So I want to personally thank Amber for stepping in, doing a huge amount of work on this, and taking over very expeditiously and making things run smoothly. And Amber's going to stay with us. She is taking the other part of her job, which is doing a lot of the typing and administrative functions for the board staff. So she will be with us and may be able to help out in the future as needed. So thank you. And then I do want to introduce Sue Genera. Sue is my new executive secretary, just started yesterday. Sue comes to us from the Department of General Services, the Office of Public School, and she served as the assistant to the executive director there. They also have a board called the State Allocation Board that's made up of a number of legislative members, along with the Superintendent of Public Schools, Department of Finance, and General Services. So she's used to dealing with board members and board functions. I think she'll fit in very well. I want to introduce Lori Kemper, Assistant Executive Officer, Doug Smith, and Chuck Curtis, Ellen Miller. Richard is not here. I can't see Richard out there, but I know Richard Booth will be joining us shortly. Bob Larson, Doug Carey, Taylor Zentner, Angie Strum, and Hannah Schember. Where's Hannah? Okay. The light is not very good back there, Hannah. You know, I'm blind in one eye right now, so I'm sorry. And then I want to introduce Kim Niemeyer. Kim is on staff with the State Water Resources Control Board and is the board's attorney. And then following your presentation or your introductory remarks, I do have an award to give out.
Okay. Right. I'd like to thank Amber for doing a great job these last few months with Lori Applegate retiring. And thank you very much. The Regional Board will be considering many items during this meeting. Although we must use our time wisely, we encourage your input on any item so that our decision will be based on all available information. If you wish to speak to any agenda item, please fill out one of our orange cards indicating which item you wish to address and how many minutes you will need. Although we do not administer an oath in most proceedings before this board, we expect all statements made before this board to be truthful, with no attempts to mislead by false statements, deceptive presentations, or failure to include essential information. We also ask that you abide by our ground rules, which are treat everyone with respect. That means the board members, board staff, and anyone testifies, and your fellow citizens. In the interest of everyone's time, please communicate your ideas clearly and effectively. So that we can develop an accurate administrative record, we ask that you speak only after you are recognized, and at that time come to the lectern and speak to the agenda item. If you do not follow these rules or become repetitious, I may ask you to sit down. Any person aggrieved by an action or inaction of the regional board, included but not limited to the issuance, modification, or rejection of waste discharge requirements, administrative civil liabilities, or a cease and desist order, may petition the State Water Resources Control Board to review the decision. The board must receive the petition within 30 days of the regional board meeting at which the action was taken. Board staff will provide you with copies of the regulations about filling out a petition if you request them. They are also available on the State Water Resources Board Control site. And with that, Eric, I have your presentation.
Yes. Doug, come on up. It's with great pleasure that I am going to present to Doug Carey a certificate of appreciation as a with a Superior Accomplishment Award. I want to just talk a little bit about why it is that we are giving this to him. And Chuck Curtis was the one that nominated Doug for this award, so I want to thank Chuck for putting this forward. Doug is an engineering geologist. He's been with the Water Board staff for over 10 years now. His primary duties have been with the Leviathan mine site. And as many of you know, that's a very difficult project. You know, all of the staff that have been working on that site have made major contributions to improvement of water quality and trying to do the best we can with the situation we have up there. And Doug has stepped in, and again, he's contributed major issues and improved the operation of our treatment facility up there. One of the great things, and this is sort of interesting, is that Doug was a consultant working at the Leviathan mine for one of our contractors before he came to us. And it's sort of unusual to be able to, for the state to steal people from the private side as opposed to the other way around. So we're extremely pleased that Doug came on to work with us. In the more recent years, as many of you know, we're involved in some litigation over the Leviathan mine, and Doug is providing a great deal of expertise to our litigation team. We're very appreciative of that. His knowledge of the site, his knowledge of geology, and his willingness basically to go out and get the job done has been really important to us. So, Doug, thank you very much. And just everybody knows this does come with a cash award also, but we really appreciate your efforts, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug. We'll go into our first item on our agenda, and it's a public hearing, updated waste discharge requirements for the NPDES permit for stormwater urban runoff. With that, we will open the public hearing, and Harold wants to make a
statement. Yes. Normally, we start off with a staff presentation on an item, but I wanted to give some introductory remarks on this item before we begin. And I thought I'd start out with explaining the reasoning why I recommended that this item be placed on this board agenda rather than delaying consideration for the permit to a future board meeting, as was requested by the three municipal dischargers that are named in the permit. Also, as part of my introductory remarks, I'd like to propose a process for the Water Board to consider the numerous comments that have been received to date and those that you will hear today. There have been a lot of comments that have been submitted, and obviously they fall into a number of different categories. Some of them are more technical in nature, some of them are more policy in nature. And at least when I went through it, I sort of felt that if you sort of put those comments in different what I call boxes or categories, it might make it easier for you to look at the comments and figure out what to do with them. You have to look at it from the perspective that, you know, clearly you have many options today. You may decide to recommend adoption of the permit the way it's being presented to you, and I know we have some changes that we want to present to you today. You may decide to continue the permit to a future date. So those are some of the options you have. Obviously, if you want to continue it to a future date, I would like some very clear direction about what you expect us to do on the staff level to work on some of the issues that you feel need to be worked on further before it's presented to you. On the same token, if you decide to go ahead and adopt a permit today, I would like, and I think it's appropriate for you to provide some rationale to members of the public, the permittees, as to why it is you feel it's important to move ahead today with the permit. As you may have noticed, I did not make a recommendation in advance of this meeting on this item like I normally do. And the reason for that is I really wanted to wait to see what all the written comments were. The comments were just due on November 30th. So at the time this material was put together, I did not have the opportunity to be able to look at those comments. And I also really want to hear what is said today. This is a real good opportunity, I think, for the policy members from the three entities that are subject to the permit to talk directly with the regional board, the policy members here who have to make that decision. And I think it's really important to have that dialogue. But at the end of the hearing, I'd like an opportunity to make a recommendation before you actually go into your deliberations on what to do. I want to start out, and I really want to thank the three municipalities for their willingness to engage in what I consider to be really extensive dialogue at both the staff level. I think your staffs have spent many, many hours working with our staffs on a lot of the technical aspects of the permit. But I also really want to acknowledge the engagement of the elected representatives. This is very unusual when we move into this kind of permit to have that kind of engagement at a policy level. And I really appreciate the opportunity that they've afforded me to come to their city council meeting, their board of supervisors meeting, and to meet with them sort of offline to talk about many of the issues. So I really want to thank them for that opportunity, and I think it's been helpful on both sides to understand really where our differences lie and to understand the different issues that are involved in this. As you probably have read in the material, the three municipalities recommended very strongly that the Water Board delay consideration of this permit to a future Water Board meeting. I think as a result of the dialogue that I've been able to have with the municipalities, I've really come to an understanding of what their issues are. And frankly, I think a lot of them really need to be decided at a policy level. They're not something that I think we can continue to debate about at a staff level and come to some resolution. This really deserves your deliberation and your consideration, and frankly, your decision whether to move forward or to give me some clear direction about some of the policy issues they've raised. So that was the basis, really, for my recommending to Chairman Clark that this item be put on the agenda to really give you an opportunity to hear what they have to say and to provide your guidance to me as to what to do with the concerns that are being raised. As I said before, in looking at the comments, I felt it was easier for me to go through them, at least, in looking at them from three different groups. The first being issues specific to the permit language. Clearly, there's a lot of issues about what's in the permit, some of the detailed language with each of the permit sections. We've tried to address many of those, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. The second group of comments that I think that have come forward are issues related to the recently adopted total maximum daily load for the Lake Powell Basin, or the TMDL. And the third group that I've sort of identified is what I consider to be broader policy issues, and I'll explain a little bit more about that as I move through here. So getting back to the permit changes, as I said, there's a number of them that sort of fit within this first group. I just want to start out by saying, this permit must implement federal and state laws and regulations. So while the Water Board cannot eliminate from the permit specific federal requirements, it does have some discretion on how these requirements should be implemented. So there's areas where I think there's still some discretion on your part, and you need to look at that pretty closely. In terms of looking at the permit itself, I think it's easy if you look at the permit as being two separate sections, and you'll hear some discussion about that today during the presentation and I think during the comments. One of the sections deals with the federal mandatory stormwater management plan requirements. These requirements are consistent with all stormwater permits throughout the nation. They are specified in federal law and regulation. And frankly, the board doesn't have discretion to pick and choose which one of those should be in the permit or shouldn't be in the permit. The second section of the permit deals with implementation of the recently adopted TMDL. And so those are the two major sections of the permit that, that I think are really most important to your considerations today. In terms of the stormwater management plan or the federal minimum requirements, we at the staff level feel that, that we have gone about as far as we can to reduce the burden on the municipalities as far as what it would take to comply with the various sections. And then, frankly, any further changes probably would effectively gut the specific requirements of the federal law. So that's something you're going to have to look at, and clearly, again, you have discretion in that area to some degree. Obviously, if you go too far, you run the risk of EPA rejecting the permit at some point down the line. So we have to be a little cautious about that, but we think we've gone about as far as we can go, and I think you can see by EPA's comments, they've agreed that these are sort of less burdensome than many of the other stormwater permits, but they're willing to accept it. The second group of comments is specific to the TMDL. And some of these comments question the scientific validity of the TMDL and raise the concern that the municipalities will not have the financial wherewithal to achieve the load reduction requirements called for over the next 5 years. One of the comments indicates that the TMDL adds a new regulatory tier to the existing requirements that face municipalities in the Lake Tahoe Basin. But I think in reality, the TMDL requirements replace the existing concentration-based effluent limits that are part of the existing NPDES permit. So they're not really new. Yes, it is a different benchmark to go for, but it's the same basic type of best management practices and activities to reduce pollutants and stormwater runoff. Is it more specific? Absolutely. But it is. I don't think it's a new tier of regulatory requirements. The other aspect of this that I think you need to look at from the TMDL perspective is that the board does not have the ability to adopt a permit that is different from the adopted water quality control plan or your basin plan, which contains the Lake Tahoe TMDL. That has been it's been an adopted TMDL. It's gone through all of the approval processes up the line. It has not been challenged. So it is a regulation. And if you feel that the TMDL needs to be changed, in other words, if you feel that you don't want to implement some of the TMDL requirements in the basin in the permit, what you need to do is to direct me to reopen the TMDL. But you really can't deviate from the TMDL in the permits that you're considering today. The third group of comments, I think, is made up of issues relative to actions by other entities and the development of strategies to fund and implement the load reduction activities. Clearly, these are very worthwhile activities. We think that we need to continue to engage in these activities. But again, I think you have to weigh the issue of the time it would take to reconcile some of these issues, to develop some of these strategies, in terms of delaying the permit from today, in terms of the value gained from that time frame that goes by. Two examples, I guess, just to bring it home from the comments that I've read. One of the comments was that the permit requirements that are being proposed have different infiltration requirements for private property than those in the proposed Tahoe Regional Planning Agency regional plan update. That's absolutely true. They are different. The TRPA requirements currently being proposed are more restrictive. They're not different. They're more restrictive. And I think we go through life with different agencies having different levels of requirements, some being more restrictive than others. But we don't think it sends the municipalities in a different direction. And there's no guarantee that the TRPA will adopt what's being proposed now. They may see the benefit of the requirements that are in the proposed permit, and they may change back to that. But again, the TRPA regional plan is not going to be considered until December 2012, a year from now. And then a second example, I guess, is the request to delay permit adoption for the development of a basin-wide strategy to implement and fund load reduction activities. I would say from that point of view, there's nothing in the permit that precludes the development of such a basin-wide strategy. And frankly, the permit gives all of the entities until 2013 to propose their compliance strategies. Basically, sufficient time to develop this strategy that's being talked about. The last point you I think should consider is that the Water Board cannot specify that the municipalities work together. So there may be a commitment to do that. There may be firm belief that that's an appropriate thing to do. But if they come back a year from now and say, we haven't done it, where do we go from there? So I guess in my opinion, looking at this, and I think it's something you may want to consider in your deliberations, is what is the value gained in postponing adoption of the permit? If there's clear value to be gained, then maybe that's a good reason to postpone. If you feel that there are certain things that could be done concurrently with starting to move forward to comply with the permit, then I think that's a different perspective to take on. So the other, and then the last point that I would like to make on this is that if you delay adoption of the permit for months, years, the Water Board is really left with determining compliance for the municipalities with the current permit conditions, which frankly are not consistent with the kind of activities that we would like to see pursuant to the TMDL. Those things that are more cost effective, that would look at quantifiable load reductions. The concentration limits basically send the entities to look for every drop of stormwater and trying to treat it. We've heard at least from Caltrans, I don't know how the entities would feel about it, but Caltrans has said that we have to comply with what the current permit is. So that's the other aspect of it, is that the current permit does have a different philosophy about stormwater treatment, and the new permit implements the TMDL, which really does change the dynamics in terms of how we see best management practices and stormwater treatment happening in the Lake Tahoe Basin. So with that, I would like to call on Bob Larson to make a staff presentation. I expect this presentation, along with questions, to be quite lengthy, maybe up to an hour. I think it's appropriate that the board also give sufficient time to those that want to speak after Bob to present their points of view. You have all afternoon. You have into the evening if you need to finish this item. So I really feel it's important that you have this kind of dialogue with the policy members from the other entities that are here, and eventually reach some decision today on this item.
Bob? Good afternoon. My name is Bob Larson. I'm an environmental scientist working with the Water Board on restoration and stormwater management issues at Lake Tahoe. I'm happy to be here today to continue our conversation about the updated municipal MPDS stormwater permit. As Harold mentioned, this permit is an important element of implementing the Lake Tahoe TMDL and is proposing arguably some of the most innovative load reduction tracking measures ever included in a regulatory document of its kind. We worked very hard and come a long way, and I'm grateful to have this opportunity to share our work with you today. I have about 40 slides of material to go through. I'll start with a brief review of the permit and then talk about comments received on the tentative draft and changes made in response to those comments. I'll then spend the bulk of the presentation covering remaining issues, recent comments received, and our response to those recent comments. I'll then wrap up by reviewing of the late revisions and will then take any questions. As I said, and as Harold mentioned, we have quite a bit of material to cover, so please, if you need to ask clarifying questions, please don't hesitate to interrupt me. These are the three main elements of the permit that we discussed in September. The permit maintains the stormwater management plan and minimum control measure elements required by federal MPDS regulations. The big shift for this permit is the inclusion of Lake Tahoe TMDL load reduction standards and associated pollutant load reduction monitoring and tracking requirements. As you may remember, the tentative permit had some known gaps, specifically because we'd yet to receive the permittee's baseline load analyses, the load allocation and Lake Clarity credit requirement tables were blank. We also discussed early feedback we received from EPA, expressing concern about changes we made to those standard MPDS elements. Finally, we knew that some stakeholders felt that the proposed monitoring requirements fell short of what was needed. Comments on the tentative draft were due on September 15th, the day after I last presented to the board on this topic. We received comment letters from the 9 entities listed here. Note that we failed to include the Friends of Lake Tahoe comment letter in your agenda package, and we've added it as a late addition. The Friends of Lake Tahoe letter simply echoed the comments provided by the League to Save Lake Tahoe, and our responses to the League were copied to the Friends. These next few slides summarize the major changes that we've made to the tentative draft. First, the 3 permittees all submitted the required baseline pollutant and load estimates, and those values are now included in the permit and provide the basis for the required load reductions and associated Lake Clarity credit requirements. USEPA staff have been very generous with their time and provided us with detailed suggested edits to the permit and the monitoring reporting plan and the fact sheet. For the most part, we accepted those edits as suggested. And the last point on this slide, as mentioned in September, we were working on updating the Lake Clarity crediting handbook. That effort is complete, and the updated handbook is now available on our website and is incorporated into the proposed permit. We received a number of comments expressing concern about transparency regarding the approval process for various required documents. In response, the permit has been edited to compel Water Board approval for the 3 major document submittals. Specifically, the pollutant load reduction plans, stormwater management plans, and water quality monitoring plans must all now come before the board for consideration. This provides a clear process for public review and feedback and offers the board the opportunity to weigh in on the adequacy of these submittals. The permittees and other commenters provided a ton of valuable suggestions on how to make this permit better, and staff made a number of minor wording changes and small adjustments that collectively helped clarify compliance expectations. It was brought to our attention that we failed to include mandatory standard language regarding compliance with receiving water standards, so that language has been added, and the appendix of receiving water standards was edited to be more inclusive. Finally, there were more typographical errors, incomplete sentences, and other errata than I'd like to admit, and with the help of those who provided comments, we were able to correct the vast majority of these items. During the weeks of late September through October and into November, we worked closely with the permittees to hammer out our differences and adjust permit language. I spent many hours on the phone with permittee staff, and those folks devoted significant time to providing detailed feedback. Although we didn't always see eye to eye, I think the permittees would agree that the lines of communication were open during this time. Also, as Harold mentioned, we reached out to the permittee elected representatives, and Harold visited both the El Dorado and Placer County Boards of Supervisors and presented at the City of South Lake Tahoe City Council. This slide summarizes the timeline for the draft permit release and review. The tentative permit was initially sent out in August with comments due by mid-September. And as I just discussed, we made a number of changes on the tentative draft and released an updated permit on October 31st with comments due on November 30th. Some minor adjustments were made to the permit prior to its distribution with the Water Board agenda on September 22nd. 5 different comment letters were submitted by the November 30th comment deadline. The USEPA provided the letter expressing their support for the permit as drafted. 3 permittees, as mentioned, all submitted detailed comment letters asking the board to delay adoption. And finally, Jason Drew with Nichols Consulting submitted comments via email expressing support for the permit and offering some suggestions for improvement. Water Board staff responded in writing to the 5 submitted letters, and the letters and responses have both been provided to the board, and there were copies made available to the public in the back. Our apologies for not making enough copies. We underestimated the number of folks who would arrive today, but hopefully each entity has a copy. I'm going to take a little bit of time to more clearly explain the comments submitted by the 3 permittees and provide staff response to the outstanding comments and concerns. Before diving into specific details, I'd like to first discuss some big picture, overarching comments that the permittees have expressed. I'll refer to these items as the Big 3. In general, all 3 permittees have expressed these concerns, and these themes thread throughout all of the permittee comment letters. The most consistent concern we've heard from all permittees is that permit compliance tracking and reporting measures, particularly the Lake Clarity crediting program, adds an enormous administrative burden that cannot be borne by available resources. The gist of the issue here is the belief that complying with these permit accounting and reporting measures will simply cost too much. The second issue that we continue to hear, particularly from El Dorado County, is that the pollutant load allocations and associated regulatory oversight are unbalanced. The expressed concern is that runoff from forested areas must be contributing more pollutants than the TMDL estimates suggest, and that load reduction tracking mechanisms similar to those for the urban source must be implemented for other pollutant sources. And the last of the big three issues is related to monitoring. Permittees are concerned that the monitoring requirements, including the condition assessment, field inspection, and water quality monitoring requirements, are too prescriptive, unnecessary, and overwhelmingly expensive. Looking first at cost, the concern about cost is not new, and we've spent great amounts of time combing through the permit to find opportunities to reduce the administrative burden. At this point, the permit includes the bare minimum elements needed to be consistent with federal NPDES requirements and the Lake Tahoe TMDL Basin Plan Amendment. The TMDL defines the need for quantifiable pollutant load reduction tracking measures for urban pollutant sources, and the Lake Clarity Crediting Program and the associated tools are the only known methods available to meet that need. As mentioned, we've taken every opportunity to trim those administrative costs to allow the permittees to focus on tracking pollutant load reductions using the Lake Clarity Crediting Program. Given the magnitude of implementation resources put on the ground to construct, operate, and maintain water quality improvements, we believe the cost of tracking and accounting for benefits is reasonable and prudent, and that those measures are critically important for prioritizing the use of limited implementation funds. Despite the fact that the Lake Tahoe TMDL went through an extensive peer review process and has been adopted by this board, the State Water Board, and approved by the United States EPA, El Dorado County and the City of South Lake Tahoe continue to express skepticism regarding the TMDL findings. Unfortunately, the skepticism is not backed by any peer-reviewed science effort. We have not seen any information that would support the assertion that forested areas contribute a greater percentage of pollutants than estimated by the TMDL. There are separate ongoing efforts to define methods to track load reduction activities from other pollutant sources. But given the relative magnitude of these other pollutant sources and the comparatively small load reduction expectations, those methods are likely to be less intensive than those proposed as part of this permit. In September, we talked about how a number of stakeholders were concerned that the water quality monitoring requirements were inadequate and should greatly be expanded. At that time, the permittees supported the draft requirements as reasonable and appropriate. We're now hearing from the permittees that the proposed requirements don't provide useful information and are too expensive to implement. As mentioned at the last meeting, we worked hard to craft monitoring requirements to link on-the-ground conditions to model pollutant load estimates to more effectively assess compliance with load reduction requirements. The monitoring requirements in this latest draft have not changed much. The program still focuses on treatment facility and roadway condition assessments that are directly linked to model input variables, coupled with targeted water quality monitoring to help gather data to better understand the accuracy of our estimation tools. We believe that the proposed monitoring requirements well balance the need for information with available monitoring resources. Now that we've discussed the overarching concerns, I want to take a few minutes to go over specific issues raised by each permittee, starting first with the City of South Lake Tahoe. The City submitted a detailed comment letter on November 30th, and that letter asked that the Board delay permit adoption for a number of reasons. In addition to the big three issues we just covered, the City has echoed comments made by the California Tahoe Conservancy that a detailed, comprehensive implementation and funding strategy is needed before the permit is adopted to ensure the permit requirements are feasible. We agree that more regional collaborative planning is desirable, and the permit supports this concept. The permit requires the permittees to develop detailed pollutant load reduction plans by March 2013, providing ample opportunity for permittees to identify opportunities to work together. And through the crediting program, permittees can implement joint water quality improvement efforts and share the associated credits. There's no need to delay the permit to support such a regional strategy, as the permit itself provides a catalyst for such a strategy to be developed. The City's comment letter expresses concern about consistency between Tahoe Regional Planning Agency, Tahoe Resource Conservation District, and Water Board policies regarding private property BMPs. The City rightly notes that the permit allows the City flexibility to target private property BMPs as a load reduction opportunity or prioritize other actions, while TRPA's regulation requires all private property owners to implement BMPs. The TRCD, in turn, provides support to homeowners to implement BMPs. Although these three programs and policies are different, they're clearly not in conflict. At the end of the day, federal NPDES requirements hold local government responsible for runoff from private properties, regardless of other agency actions. Load reductions associated with private property BMPs present a significant opportunity to help permittees achieve needed load reductions, and the TRPA and TRCB programs are both supportive of that effort. Both TRPA and TRCB have committed to working with local government to target their programs in areas where permittees would like to accomplish load reductions. The city has asked what the potential consequences of permit violation might be, and in particular, whether mandatory minimum penalties would apply. Because the load reduction and associated Lake Clarity credit requirements constitute numeric effluent limits, failure to comply with these values may trigger mandatory minimum penalties. This may be an issue in 2016 when the ultimate compliance with load reduction requirements is assessed, and a single one-time penalty may apply to each pollutant of concern for the 2016 Walker year. This represents a potential mandatory minimum penalty of $9,000. With respect to other permit elements, describing any future enforcement action would be speculative. The Water Board has discretion to exercise its enforcement authority, and if and when violations occur, they will be considered in the context of the reasons for noncompliance. The city's comment letter asserts that proposed inspection requirements for construction and industrial properties overlap with the Water Board's own programs, and as such, these requirements should be eliminated. This is not true. The permit provides the permittees great latitude in defining construction and industrial property inspection priorities. In fact, we've added a provision that allows the permittees to leverage inspection efforts of other agencies, including the Water Board, to meet their inspection program needs. For example, a large construction site in the city under Water Board permit may be considered a high priority by the city due to its proximity to surface waters and large area of disturbance. In this instance, as a high priority site, the city would be required to inspect that site weekly during the construction season and may use any Water Board inspections to help meet that weekly inspection requirement. On the other hand, there may be another large construction project under Water Board permit that the city doesn't see as a priority, and as such, it wouldn't need to inspect that site at all. So depending on how the permittees prioritize their various construction and industrial sites, the requirements do not necessarily overlap with the Water Board permit programs. The city and Placer County have both stated that the proposed load reduction progress report, a pollutant load reduction progress report, will be expensive to prepare and does not provide useful information. Both the city and Placer County suggest that this requirement be eliminated. The requirement that they're referring to is Permit Order 4F, and to ensure the permittees are documenting load reductions in a timely manner and not waiting to the end of the permit term, we initially considered a variety of mid-permit load reduction requirements. Ultimately, with permittee feedback, we decided to require the permittees to document all load reduction efforts completed between 2004 and 2011 by the middle of this permit term. This means that the permittees will need to assess all projects and activities that they wish to seek credit for since the 2004 baseline load was established and register those catchments in the Lake Clarity Crediting Program. We believe this is an important requirement. Without it, there's only a single load reduction compliance point, and it's not until the end of the permit in 2016. This requirement provides a reasonable check-in point to assess progress at meeting load reduction requirements. This allows us and the permittees to have a clear picture of whether the 2016 load reduction requirements will be met or not, and provide us with an opportunity to adaptively manage the permit if necessary. Looking next at El Dorado County's concerns. El Dorado County has consistently expressed skepticism about the value of the load reduction accounting and tracking tools that have been developed by various basin partners. The county's most recent letter reiterates their belief that the load reduction model and associated graphic assessment methods are cumbersome and inaccurate, and that the use of these tools should not be required. The load estimation and condition assessment tools have been developed with the support and input from a broad range of stakeholders, including El Dorado County. It is critically important that we have consistent ways to estimate load reductions and track relevant field variables to verify that on-the-ground conditions are consistent with model inputs. While the developed tools are not perfect, we feel strongly that these tools provide the best methods to consistently and efficiently assess pollutant load reduction progress. That said, it is because of El Dorado's long-standing position on this issue that the permit provides the permittees the opportunity to use their own methods to track and report pollutant load reduction activities. The county has expressed frustration that the requirement to demonstrate equivalency places a burden on the county, but we simply must have some assurance that any alternative measures are providing comparable results. El Dorado and Placer County have both suggested that the standard stormwater program elements, such as commercial and industrial site inspections, outreach and education components, and illicit discharge detection and elimination requirements, do not directly result in pollutant load reductions, and as such, should be eliminated or reduced. Federal NPDES regulations require that all municipal NPDES permits include these standard program components, and we've worked closely with the permittees and the US EPA to provide the permittees flexibility to target load reduction tracking measures while still meeting federal NPDES requirements. Stormwater management program requirements in this permit are dramatically less than those included in other permits of this kind, and more flexible than the requirements of even the previous permit. We simply cannot eliminate these elements completely. EPA has been very understanding of our concerns and has worked closely with us to meet our overall TMDL implementation goals. While EPA would still like to see much more detailed requirements similar to other permits around throughout the state, they have expressed their support for this permit as drafted. We've already talked a bit about costs, but I want to briefly touch on El Dorado County's claim that tracking and reporting permit compliance is estimated to cost roughly $2 million per year. That's a huge number, and county staff have indicated that much of the cost is related to the Lake Clarity Crediting Program requirements. For another data point, Placer County, with support of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, conducted a detailed analysis of the cost of meeting TMDL load production requirements, including the tracking and accounting program needs. The final report for that project puts the cost of implementing the Lake Clarity Crediting Program and the associated condition assessment and reporting work at $75,000 per year. That's a lot less than $2 million. The Lake Clarity Crediting Program Support Services project that the Water Board conducted went through program elements step by step and estimated that each jurisdiction would need to devote roughly a half-time position to this task. Again, a lot less than $2 million per year. It is possible that El Dorado County is estimating the cost of developing independent load estimation field condition assessment tools, in which case the $2 million estimate may be reasonable. However, given that the existing tools have been developed and are supported by agency stakeholders, the cost of recreating these tools is purely discretionary. El Dorado County's comment letter includes several pages of information describing why they believe the TMDL findings are inaccurate. Many of these arguments were made last year during the TMDL adoption process, and most of the questions raised are not relevant to this permit update. I do, however, want to address this one point. The county suggests that the TMDL and the permit do not prioritize or otherwise acknowledge the benefits of infiltration. The comment letter further states that the TMDL program relies on active filtration and street sweeping as the primary implementation methods, while ignoring infiltration opportunities. These statements suggest that county staff greatly misunderstand the TMDL and the load estimation tools associated with this permit. Infiltration is by far the most effective way to reduce pollutant loads, and the TMDL Basin Plan Amendment explicitly states this fact. The pollutant load reduction model accounts for several different ways to reduce volumes and associated pollutants from stormwater discharges, including counting for infiltration from private property vehicles. The best management practices rapid assessment methodology includes field measures to evaluate infiltration rates. I could go on, but the point here is that infiltration has been and will continue to be the go-to treatment option when conditions support it, and the TMDL and this permit do not ignore that fact. The Lake Clarity Crediting Program was developed to award credit for any action to reduce loads, and the crediting program and permit allow the permittees to make their own implementation decisions to meet permit requirements. If El Dorado County wishes to pursue a program that doesn't include street sweeping or stormwater filtration and instead focus solely on infiltrating stormwater, they may do so. And other jurisdictions may choose otherwise. The choice is theirs to make. Unfortunately, the county appears to be misinformed about how the program incorporates infiltration processes, and we are committed to working with them to correct this misunderstanding. Finally, looking at Placer County's comments. Placer County Public Works staff provided a detailed markup of the permit and the monitoring program, describing their suggested changes to make the permit more palatable. We accepted a number of minor wording changes, but were unable to make all the suggested edits. I want to touch on some of their suggestions and briefly discuss why we didn't accept some of the changes. First, Placer County made a number of suggestions related to the legal authority requirements. Specifically, they recommend eliminating a list of non-stormwater discharges that must be controlled and suggested that the requirement to provide a list of responsible departments is not needed. The legal authority section, as drafted, is consistent with federal NPDES requirements and other permits throughout the state. As such, we're reluctant to make the suggested edits, that they do not substantively change the overall intent of this requirement. Like El Dorado County, Placer County suggests several changes to lessen or otherwise minimize components of the stormwater management plan. As we've discussed previously, we've made every effort to focus those permit requirements on those areas that matter most while staying within the bounds of federal requirements. Placer County and El Dorado County have both asked on several occasions that the requirement to prepare an enforcement response plan be eliminated from this permit. Permittees have suggested that this requirement is redundant with the legal authority requirements and does not provide value. We disagree and believe it is important for the permittees to clearly describe how they will exercise their legal authority to address violations of its ordinances and document a program of escalating enforcement response to repeated offenses. This is a standard component of most stormwater permits, and it makes sense to include it in this one. The updated draft includes a requirement for the permittees to submit an updated pollutant load reduction plan with their application for permit renewal in 2016 to begin planning for the next five-year load reduction target. Both El Dorado and Placer counties have indicated that this is an unreasonable expectation. Given that the next permit term will implement the 10-year TMBL load reduction requirements, Water Board staff believe it is important for the permittees to begin planning for the next permit shortly before this one expires. This will ensure that load reduction actions and associated tracking measures continue between this permit and the next without a break. Looking at the monitoring and reporting program, Placer County suggests that we limit the number of catchments registered in the Lake Clarity crediting program to no more than 7, indicating that compliance with load reduction requirements may be determined by extrapolating the results of the analyses performed for these 7 catchments. As we've talked a lot about, holding the permittees accountable for meeting the load reduction requirements defined by the TMDL is the primary goal of this permit. Limiting the application of a crediting program would undermine this goal and would not provide us all with the much-needed verification that load reductions have or have not occurred. The permit includes a requirement to annually review any changes in land use, impervious cover, and operations and maintenance practices to qualitatively determine if such changes have potentially altered baseline pollutant load rates. Placer County has suggested that this is not necessary or particularly useful. The reference requirement implements an element of the TMDL Basin Plan Amendment and is intended to make sure that the permittees do not allow land use or other changes that will increase pollutant loads at a catchment scale. This requirement cannot be changed without amending the basin plan. Placer County's edits include changes to limit the extent of stormwater facility and commercial, industrial, and municipal site inspections. As mentioned, the permit already provides the permittees great flexibility in prioritizing inspection activities, and we see no value in further limiting the extent of those requirements. Placer County would like to add language that would make the water quality monitoring components of the permit contingent upon the availability of outside funding. As we talked about, we believe that the proposed water quality monitoring requirements are reasonable and appropriate, and the permittees have an obligation to perform this monitoring whether outside funding is available or not. That said, there are approximately $750,000 in Southern Nevada Public Lands Management Act funds that have been set aside to assist municipalities in meeting water quality monitoring requirements, and our permit requirements were drafted explicitly with this funding availability in mind. Finally, Placer County proposed a series of edits to the BMP effectiveness monitoring requirements. Specifically, they suggest deleting the bulk of the proposed language in favor of a more general requirement to perform targeted research regarding traction abrasive application recovery methods. While we agree that work is needed to better understand the load reductions associated with abrasives management, the suggested language is too general and does not clearly define compliance expectations. As drafted, the permit provides the flexibility to study a wide range of stormwater BMPs, including abrasive management practices, while clearly defining monitoring expectations. Okay, the last thing I want to do is look closely at the late revisions. We handed out a few sheets describing the late revisions, and the vast majority of the changes are to correct outstanding typographical errors and other errata, and to make a few minor wording changes. There are three items, however, that I'd like to highlight. First, as noted on the fourth page of the late revisions, item 10, we have edited the permit to add the fiscal analysis requirement to the stormwater management plan update requirements and make it a one-time submittal rather than an annual assessment. This means the analysis permit compliance costs, including pollutant load reduction elements, will be included in the stormwater management plans that will come before the board in the spring of 2013. Next, late revision item 11 edits the permit to clarify that the pollutant load reduction requirements are based on average annual estimates and that ultimate compliance with the load reductions and associated late clarity credit requirements will be evaluated as of water year 2016. This clarification doesn't effectively change the compliance date, but rather provides more detailed information regarding how compliance will be assessed to be consistent with the late clarity crediting program protocols and with the basin plan. The last item I'd like to highlight is late revision item 12. We've added some additional text to include an explicit prohibition on increasing pollutant loads above baseline values. This was added to more clearly implement the requirements specified in the basin plan. In accordance with the amendment adopted last year, permittees must determine on an annual basis whether changes in land use, impervious coverage, or operations maintenance practices have caused pollutant loading to increase at a catchment scale. If permittees find that such changes have caused pollutant loads to increase, the permit requires that they register the catchment in question in the late clarity crediting program to describe how BMPs and other actions will effectively offset any load increase. Believe it or not, that's all the presentation material I have for you today. In summary, I want to reiterate that the draft permit before you represents months of collaborative effort between Water Board and Somerset staff. We believe that this permit moves TMDL implementation forward in a reasonable manner and gives the permittees the flexibility they need to achieve our shared water quality goals. The permit includes a reopener clause and provides several check-in points and opportunities for board feedback to facilitate adaptive management of this permit. In our opinion, we've refined this permit as much as possible. Any further adjustments to the TMDL provisions or standard NPDES elements are beyond our authorities at staff level. To make such changes, we believe the Water Board will need to reopen the basin plan to revisit the late tile TMDL, or be willing to put forth a permit that is in conflict with federal NPDES regulations and subject to rejection by the US EPA. We're grateful for the time and energy that everyone, including you and all the folks in this room, have put into this permit, and with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Dr. Horn?
Yeah, about the administrative burden of complying with requirements of this permit, specifically regarding the fracking tools. Can you tell me what computer software is used to develop those tracking tools? I mean, if it's something like Excel that, in my experience, I can easily import and export data, you know, and populate a new spreadsheet, it's not a burdensome exercise. Or if it's some one-off computer software that the permittees may not be familiar with.
To answer your question, there's no proprietary software that's been used. The software that's both the pollutant load reduction model and the rapid assessment methodologies use are all publicly available software, mostly access databases. I do want to say that those databases are in some cases quite cumbersome, in that these tools were not developed in conjunction with each other as they should have been. There is a project underway right now that the Water Board is working with a consultant to make these tools more user-friendly, and so we'll be substituting some of these refined databases as they become available. But right now we know that there are some elements that are somewhat cumbersome to use, but permittees, again, have an opportunity to use their own databases in some cases and kind of pick and choose which elements of those things work for them, as long as the fundamental information hasn't changed. That's what we're saying.
I have questions, but I think that they're probably more meaningfully asked after other people make their presentation.
Eric?
I have a couple of questions. How would you go about proving that the database from El Dorado County is equivalent? or that their tools are equivalent if they want to use their own? How would they prove that?
The permit includes a specific provision to describe how equivalency will be assessed, and essentially what we'd like to see is that the county or anyone else proposing alternative methods pair their method with the accepted methods to demonstrate that the scores are equivalent and consistent. Both the rapid assessment methodology tools, the roadway rapid assessment methodology, and the MP rapid assessment methodologies score condition on a 1-to-5 basis. So what we'd like to see is any alternative tool use that same scoring method. That scoring method is part of the overall structure of the Lake Clarity crediting program, and thus is critical for consistency. So what we want to see is that any alternative method be used in conjunction with the tools that have been developed and ensure that we're seeing scores that are consistent.
And talk to us a little bit about what does it mean to say that the permit has a reopener clause.
It essentially says that the permit can be reopened at any time to make adjustments if the water board or the permittees request. We can come before the board and revisit this permit any time in the 5-year permit term to make changes. This is something that was explicitly added. You may recall last time we discussed a lot about the baseline pollutant loads and the permittees' concern about the accuracy of those loads and maybe the need to revisit those loads. And so that's one example of where we may want to reopen the permit and take a look at those values, and if there's new information that suggests that those values should change, we can change those values. The same is true for the tools. If there's something else that we'd like to see or an acceptable method or some change in the database, we have an opportunity to go in and make those changes.
So permittees can come before the board or start the process. It doesn't have to start with staff.
Correct.
And we're obliged to open it if they request.
I'll look to legal and Harold to answer that question in terms of our obligation to reopen the permittee request.
Because it's an opportunity to do so. I think they would have probably a showing that they would have to make prior to see that.
Yeah.
I think if there's good reason, we wouldn't hesitate to come before you to discuss it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
None right now.
I agree with Peter that I'm going to hold off the questions I have till after some more presentations. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very good presentation.
Thank you.
The first card I have is El Dorado County Board of Supervisors.
Good afternoon, honorable board members, and thank you for giving the County of El Dorado an opportunity to comment on the draft municipal national pollutant discharge elimination systems permit. Our statement is mostly on a policy level, but afterwards we would want to bring our technical staff in, particularly to address the huge discrepancy. Thank you, my translator. Huge discrepancy there exists between the $2 million that we have assessed as far as administrative costs versus what Mr. Larson has indicated Placer County to say $75,000. That's a big thing. I am Supervisor Norma Santiago, the District 5 supervisor representing the entire board who are officially convened here today. Supervisors John Knight, Supervisor Jack Sweeney, Supervisor Ron Griggs, and our Chair Ray Nutty, along with the clerk of our board and our county council. And as an unofficial adjunct, I'm also chair of the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency, a board member on the California Tahoe Conservancy, and a Lake Tahoe resident for nearly 30 years. In fact, this board of supervisors represents several generations of family who have lived in the county of El Dorado since the 1800s. I make this point because the health of Lake Tahoe is not only a matter of policy, it is indeed a very personal matter to us all. As you have read or will read in your letter signed by Chairman Nutting, the county is committed to environmental improvement programs and has taken a leadership role in the effort of implementing sediment reduction through best management practices in Tahoe since 1982. And we have no intention to alter our efforts towards restoring Lake Clarity. We agree with the objectives of the total maximum daily load program and agree that a common public good is served with every inch of clarity achieved in Lake Tahoe. But we cannot agree with an incomplete management system and permit compliance tracking, accounting, methodology, and modeling process that we have not been allowed to fully analyze. Later today, our staff will present in greater detail our specific concerns. Essentially, the Lahontan Quality Control Board is in a position to allow the county to make allow the county more time to review and properly address the details of the TMDL program and the Lake Clarity Crediting Program. What has been created in the TMDL management systems are tools that lack scientific backing, that are not integrated, that are duplicative and or inefficient, and will require tremendous administrative staff time to analyze and implement. We are proposing, as you are proposing, as the draft permit is currently wording, two programs instead of one, asking the county to underwrite and implement processes that are unreasonable, not fully understood, and will require additional time, cost, expertise, and oversight. This is Lake Tahoe, not the Bay Area. Our processes are very different, better defined, and refined for the lake specifically, and very uniquely focused. We cannot be expected to meet the standards that are more aligned with large polluting industrial communities completely unrelated to the Tahoe Basin environment. A one-size-fits-all approach imposes unreasonable county administrative oversight and costs that will, in fact, prohibit implementation of the permit objectives, programs, and management system. As written in the current draft permit, the cost of administration and oversight will deter the county's effort in creating real, on-the-ground improvements. The administrative costs that we will incur in the TMDL management system to track compliance within the crediting program alone will burden the county's budget enough that it will significantly affect the entire program implementation. Furthermore, other forest management agencies in the basin have not been required to comply at the same level that the counties and cities are. We see this as a significant inequity. If you go through with the draft permit today, the predictable result for the county, because of these unnecessary administrative costs, will be layoffs in the transportation department, roads will not be fixed in compliance with requirements, and we may be forced to do very little towards our common goals. Simply stated, you have a process that impedes progress. When that happens, nothing gets done. Who loses? We all do, our constituents and the lake. You must, as responsible, thoughtful, intelligent board, see this from that perspective. We are not threatening inaction by any means, but we will be forced, due to extreme budgetary constraints, to put you on public notice that if you impose unachievable standards on the county, that little or no action in certain areas is a real possibility. Your board has an opportunity today to delay adoption of this draft permit until these issues are better addressed, can be better addressed. We ask that you consider, with further county staff input, more realistic, implementable processes, management system, and integration. You have the power to make this happen. And we are here as an entire board of supervisors hoping to compel you with a unified front to delay adoption of the draft permit as written and give the county more time to review and return with productive input on compliance. Again, thank you so very much, honorable board members, for your thoughtful consideration of our requests. We pledge our continuous support and dedication to Lake Clarity and look forward to working with you on a more reasonable solution.
Thank you. Comments or questions?
I had a couple of questions.
the supervisors or from the staff?
I think from the supervisor that would be possible. First of all, I'm very impressed that the entire board is here. Getting the whole board of supervisors in one place at one time, other than the meeting schedule, I know is a difficult task. Everybody has a lot of responsibilities. I appreciate your taking the time and energy to be here. My questions have to do with a couple of things. I just want to make sure I understood a couple of your comments. The first of those comments was, and I'm not claiming that I wrote this down exactly, so if I give you your comment, please tell me that I misunderstood it if I did before commenting to me, but indicated in some sense that this was a process that the county does not believe it has been fully allowed to participate in it or analyze. And I'm wondering what it is that you feel has precluded you from having that opportunity.
First of all, I want to reiterate something that Mr. Singer said earlier in terms of the level of communications that had happened between Lahontan staff and our staff and the technical discussions that have been happening. It has come to our understanding that there are certain parts of these processes that we've kind of got our hands tied. And particularly when we're looking at, right now, we are looking at the TMDL management system as a project to really assess whether the tools that we have provided in the permit are really adequate to achieve what we're trying to achieve. It's almost as if the cart has been put before the horse. And that process is just now being funded to come up with an adaptive management system that makes sense. So if you're telling us that you are in the process of putting together a management system, and at the same time we are engaging and utilizing these tools for assessing our own progress, that through this process that's being proposed in the future may negate the necessity for that, there is a problem there. If that makes any sense.
Okay.
And so we are not involved in, if I understand staff correctly, and my staff can, we are not involved in what that management system looks like. We understand it's an EPA project. We don't know what the components of it, what are they looking at, what tools are we checking, and that to me is problematic.
So, do I understand correctly that the difficulties are not with the TMDL per se and its objectives, but rather with whatever processes are going to unfold to achieve those objectives?
And, Mr. Pumphrey, if I can, I'd like to have our staff members address that question specifically now.
That sounds fine to me. Sure.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the board.
Can you speak up, please?
Good afternoon, members of the board. Good afternoon, members of the board.
There you go.
I had a microphone, but Steve Quinn, Department of Transportation, County of Colorado. And I had a card in there, so I'm not sure if that
yes.
would take place or not.
This is true.
I believe that the crux of the question is, has the permit been properly vetted out? And we received the permit in August. And my history dates back some time ago, and I'm not sure of the history of the Basin Plan Amendment, etc. It dates back to when the Basin Plan was adopted in the 80s. And then we had a subsequent permit developed into that Basin Plan. Did we have that much input? In other words, did we have actual board members engaged 100% in the development of that first permit that came out of that first basin plan? I don't know the history of that, but it seems to me that this permit, coming from that basin, from the current basin plan amendment, is a huge milestone, change, shift. And what we've been asking for is kind of vetted out. We went through the basic plan amendment. We submitted our comments. A lot of those comments were responded to. And again, your staff did a great job under Harold's direction. No question. A lot of meetings, a lot of backwards and forwards comments, written and also oral. So that basic plan amendment went through. Some of those questions that were not really properly answered were basically answered in a way from staff that says, that'll be answered in the permit. Okay? Fair enough. So we get the permit for the first time, and it's a lot of information, a lot of stuff that was still being kind of rode through as far as the vetting out and the calibration, checking of information. And so we believe that that process between the time that we handed the permit and all the other tools that are being developed in sync with that permit development weren't properly vetted out to the point where we're comfortable that everything that's in the current permit we have is amenable. And granted, amenable in the sense that we can actually physically, feasibly implement the requirements within that permit. Now, one statement that I would like to Supervisor Sandell, Chair, you made a comment about the calibration of the tool. And models are models. And we have a suite of tools. And, you know, I kind of take issue to a staff comment that basically made the assertion that the county does not understand. I think we understand fairly well. We've been doing this line of work for a long time. We know our park. We know where the water goes. We know where our infrastructure is or not. We've developed our own suite of tools that are not really based on a 20,000-foot level, broad brush, multitude of assumptions. They're based on engineering principles, fact, actual sample data, monitoring efforts that we spent over the course of 20 years into the hundreds of thousands of dollars to help generate what we believe is a tool of trust. And there's two fronts to that. We need a tool in an engineering sense that basically can be defendable. So we can't just sit up here at 20,000 foot level and hand out information relative to flows and drainage. And otherwise, it's not been calibrated and vetted out because it does have some impact to the public. So we believe that the process that we've been tracking right now for all the permit tools and suite of tools has not been properly vetted out. And we'd like to have a chance at that. So going back to the calibration, I find it very difficult to try to calibrate a model that can't be calibrated. And using that information that comes out of that model that can't be calibrated, put into another model that hasn't been calibrated, to go through and get 2 points in the lake in the second disc that is observational. How does that reconcile? We could do everything in the world to say we've met our quota for credits, yet the lake and the measurements that come back into the lake model still say the lake's declining. But the model shows progress. We believe that the assumptions that went into the model with your input from another model that hasn't been calibrated will validate that you're in compliance. So we understand that. We just don't understand that. That seems to be a disconnect between what we're doing on the land and how the lake responds. And we're just one of the multitude of land uses that directly input into the lake. So that's kind of our summary of the questions of validity of the process, the tools, and suite of tools we have to use. And how do you justify on one end using a suite of tools that hasn't been vetted out, properly calibrated? We have to generate our tool and say that we're going to meet your requirement of your tool. How does that work? How do you calibrate the two sets of data? One data set hasn't been vetted out, properly calibrated.
Okay. Let me ask this. When you say the model either can't be calibrated, that was one of the phrases that you used. The other phrase you used is hasn't been calibrated.
Actually, can I ask to specify which model we're talking
about? Well,
I'm getting
there. What do you mean by it? What are you talking about? It seems to me that you're talking about a tool which has been proposed, and then you're also talking about a tool or model which you would propose that would be equally effective in achieving the objectives of the permit. Are you saying that no model has been calibrated at all?
I believe that the model that was used to generate the baseline load, the pollutant load reduction model that was generated and developed by the EPA and LON, has not been calibrated and cannot be calibrated according to our understanding of the model. How do you calibrate an annual mean annual model?
Okay, you have to
collect actual data that's frequency based.
You have to help me here a little bit. When you use the phrase "can't be calibrated" for a person who's not a calibrator, which I'm not, what does that mean? What has to be calibrated, and why can it not be?
Well, for that, I should defer to Brendan, who's been using the model, and be able to answer that question of why it can't be calibrated. So I'd like to invite Brendan Durden to come up.
I'm going to take a politician for a chairman. My name is Jack Sweeney. Member of the Board of Supervisors in El Dorado County. I first was on the Board of Supervisors in 1985. That was my first experience for trying to improve the clarity of Lake Tahoe. I'm also a land surveyor by trade. I understand calibration. I understand numbers. And I will tell you that the problem I have today is the same as the problem I had as a board member in 1985. And by not being able to calibrate, that means you can't provide the resultant. You can't assure yourself of the resultant. And I've watched us spend $1 billion improving roadside drainage facilities, but not improving the clarity of the lake. And the clarity of the lake, and I'm in one of those families, my father and my grandfather were here in 1904 dairying. I'm very familiar with this lake. And my concern is that we're not improving the clarity. We're doing another big experiment. An experiment that will cost the taxpayers of our county positions such as deputy sheriffs, such as road maintenance, such as health providers. We can't afford yet another experiment. Now, the experiment that we're ending has been paid for through grants from the federal government. Still taxpayer money. But we haven't proved that we're improving the lake clarity. What our county is asking, what Placer County is asking, what the city of South Lake Tahoe is asking, as people who are highly concerned with the clarity of Lake Tahoe, is don't hand us something in August and adopt it in December. Let us have an opportunity to work together with your scientists and our scientists and prove that we can do something together that will resolve the clarity of Lake Tahoe. That's what we're asking. You can talk about models, and you can talk about 2.2 times 10 to the 19, and all of these things. But the practicality of it is we need to be able to prove to our constituents that the money we're going to spend will, in fact, achieve the resultant we want. That's what hasn't been proved to my board, nor has it been proved to our scientists. And we're trying to work collectively. Do not look at this as though you are the regulators and we are the supplicants. It, too, is our lake, and we want to protect it with you together. We can't do it in the continuing regulator supplicant relationship. We've got to work together, and that's what we're asking for.
No, you're not interfering at all. I'm just trying to get my head around all this.
This then leads me to ask you two things. One, what is it that you think needs to be done in order to prove that it will achieve the result? And then two, which now I discover has two parts. Part one is, who does it, when do they do it, and how much of a delay are you asking for, and what is the return benefit for the delay?
Who does it? I believe, since it's under, the lake is under a bi-state compact, I think the federal government needs to have a big part in financing this. I think the EPA should be expressing their concerns to Congress and telling Congress, you started something, now continue the program. We don't know if it's working yet or not. Let's see it through. So we need that support from the federal Congress. And they've been willing, but haven't quite, as you know, got much done back there lately. The proving that we need, I think, is more practicality. I appreciate Mr. Larson being a scientist, but there's a reality. And I think this is a grand experiment. When I look, I spent a substantial amount of time with Mr. Coyman and playing with the math and looking at the results. I think there's something we're missing about the Lake Clarity. I think there's an ingredient that isn't just the flow of sediments into the lake. I think there are other ingredients that we need to look at, and I don't think we're looking at those.
Okay, but I'm not trying to be difficult.
Nor am I.
Good. Then we hopefully we can figure out what we're saying. You, when you say we need to prove something that it will achieve the result, what I'm asking you is, I understand what you want to prove. What I want to know is how do you propose that whoever goes about proving that, and how long is it going to take, and how is it going to be done? Let me just clarify one, ask one last thing. Because I'm assuming, what I think I'm hearing you say is that you think that this proving task has to be a precursor to the adoption of the permit. So you're asking us to delay the permit until you can go through this process of proving whatever you think it is that needs to be proved. And what I'm asking you is, what is that process? What is it that you want to see proved? And to what? How long are you asking us to delay approval of the permit? And I also want staff to, because I see you, I always lean forward for the same reason you might be. So I'm going to ask that you comment on this as well.
I'm going to step aside, but I'm going to tell you, from what I put together on this, what I would do on my board is I would lock our staff, Placer County staff, City of South Lake Tahoe staff, Caltrans, and the forest, your Mr. Larson and your staff, I'd lock them up in a room for about 3 days, and I'd say, this board's going to meet again in March, and we want a solution that everyone can understand and work with in front of us. That would be my solution to the supervisor.
And let's assume that we lock them in the room, and they came, let's assume we lock them in there until March. I don't care about a three-day limit. I'll be in there for 3 months if I have to do that. What is your suggestion as to what should take place if they don't emerge from the room in lockstep?
How do we create a model that will give us a result that proves we're achieving Lake Clarity? That's what we're looking for. And we don't believe we're quite there yet.
But it seems to me that you're suggesting that if we do this room locking business, that these agencies, who at least at this to this point in time, do not have that sense of agreement, will emerge with that sense of agreement. And my question is simply, I'd love to see everybody fully on board and fully in agreement as to every possible detail known to man, as to this question and any others. but my experience in life tells me that sometimes delaying to reach agreement doesn't produce agreement. It produces delay. And so what is your suggestion to us that if we delay until March in order to obtain this agreement, that we do in March if the agreement isn't there?
Then I guess you impose something that your staff tells you to impose. One of the problems, Mr. Singer in his introduction earlier today mentioned in about three places that these are EPA conditions that we have to meet. We can't really change them. My talking to Mr. Singer, and we've spent a little time together on this subject, indicates to me that he has a significant willingness to work with our staff to get this resolved. And I think with a little more time that we can breed an understanding and breed a relationship that can bring us to a conclusion. I really believe that. I just think, you know, our board was meeting here in August or September, and we were surprised to hear that this was going on. We frankly didn't know it. So we haven't had enough time, frankly. And I'd like to, we have a gentleman that's been working more directly on this than I have, and I'd like him to answer some of your questions.
I appreciate your patience. Sometimes I'm just like a dog that has to run the scent no matter how rough the ground is.
Take a big bite, because I've been bit before, but I thank you for letting me express my personal opinion, and if I can be of more help, I'm available.
Thank you. One add on that. You just said that this thing came up in August and you didn't know anything was going on. Do you realize that part of this is because of the TMDL that we've been working on for 10 years? There's been staff, meetings, public input, stakeholders, I mean, for 10 years, which is leading up to what this permit is. Now, you know that was going on.
Bingo. I agree. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Pumphrey, Norma Santiago again, El Dorado County Supervisor. Before we get our staff to talk to those specific questions, I want to give you some assurance that if you were to put these people in, you know, to come up with this model in a room, that at the end you would get that feeling of that collaborative feeling, because we, the three jurisdictions, Placer County, El Dorado County, and the city, have had joint meetings. Our staffs have communicated constantly. We have had joint meetings with Manhattan staff. So that relationship between the three jurisdictions is already happening. And there is a lot of very, very common concerns that have been expressed here today. So with that, I'd like to give it to us.
I want our staff.
Yeah. That was where I was going,
yeah.
If I may. I mean, I think it's really important in this setting for us to be very precise in our language and to be very clear what we're talking about. There's been a lot of use of the term the model. I have no idea what model you're talking about. The Lake Clarity model has been calibrated, and the way that has been calibrated is to compare the results of the model with real data. So if you're saying the Lake Clarity model hasn't been calibrated, that's an incorrect statement. I think it would be useful if staff could get up and talk about give us the names of the models and what they do, and also explain what the management system is and what that is intended to do. I think there is confusion about which are the tools to be used by the permittees and which are the tools to be used by Lahontan. And those have different purposes. And so let's just be very clear what we're talking about.
I'm Bob Larson, fourth generation El Dorado County resident on both sides of my family. So my roots go deep here as well, and I share some of the concerns. To answer the questions about models, let's look first at the TMDL models. And as Dr. Horn indicated, the TMDL models that were developed have been peer-reviewed, have been calibrated, have been validated. There are two primary models that went into the development of the TMDL that we're talking about. As Dr. Horn mentioned, mentioned the Lake Clarity Model is the model that helps us better understand how the lake might respond to how the lake's transparency might respond to changes in pollutant loading. How far can we see the disk now? And how far can we see the disk if we reduce loads by X percentage? That is the model that helps us determine that in order to halt transparency decline and start the restoration, we need to reduce pollutant loads reaching Lake Tahoe by about 34%, by about a third. To achieve our transparency standard, we need to reduce fine sediment particle loading by about 65%. That model, again, peer-reviewed, has been the subject of a number of academic research papers, and went through the peer review process as part of the TMDL. The Lake Tahoe Watershed Model was developed in coordination with EPA at Tetra Tech. It is based on the Land Use Simulation Model in C++, which is also a calibrated and validated watershed model that is part of the EPA toolbox. That model, too, was calibrated and validated to actual water quality monitoring data. It's a long-term water quality monitoring data set known as the Lake Tahoe Interagency Monitoring Program. It's collected data for years on the tributaries, and that model was calibrated to those values. So that model is the model that was used to estimate where the loads are coming from off the landscape. That's the model that helped us determine that the bulk of the fine sediment particles reaching Lake Tahoe are coming from the urban landscape. Roughly 72% of the fine sediment particles reaching Lake Tahoe come from the urbanized areas. Again, this has, as El Dorado County has indicated, this has been a point of contention for a long time. We put the TMDL and its findings through a peer review process, and a great deal of water quality monitoring that helped inform that model in terms of the concentrations of runoff, different land uses. The finding has been supported at this point that the bulk of the pollutants affecting Lake Tahoe's transparency are coming from urban runoff. So those are the TMDL models. Is there any question about the TMDL models before I move on? Now let's look at the implementation tools. Sorry.
Oh, you had a question while the supervisor's behind.
How do you monitor when the wind blows and the sediment gets into the lake?
The California Air Resources Board, in coordination with UC Davis, conducted a detailed atmospheric deposition study. I don't know the exact details of the monitoring method, but I know it involves buckets on the lake to some extent in terms of how much material reaches the lake from atmospheric deposition. There were monitoring stations set up throughout the basin to determine where that material is coming from and measure the actual amount of material reaching the lake. UC Davis has been conducting atmospheric deposition research for roughly 25 years on Lake Tahoe as a long-term data set supporting that. Any other questions about the TMDL while we're talking about it?
Do you have monitoring above the roads and below the roads?
There were samples collected from a variety of different land uses, including what we call primary roads, which are highways or heavily used roads like Pioneer Trail, and secondary roads, residential roads, small subdivision roads. That water quality monitoring data helped inform the watershed model in terms of the concentrations of pollutants coming off those land uses.
Are we moving the monitoring?
We're getting too many people talking. We can't keep the record correct without. Let's
Sorry.
Bob and then you're next. And please stand up so that we can keep our record right.
I shouldn't open up the TMDL again for discussion. Again, I think we had a lot of discussion for years, as Jack indicated, as Chairman Clark indicated. For more than 10 years, we talked about the development of the TMDL. We helped try to share the findings of TMDL research as we went along in that process. And we reached the conclusions we reached that are documented in the TMDL report and adopted the TMDL Basic Plan Amendment. That's not what we're here today to talk about. And if the board wants to reconsider reopening the Basic Plan Amendment and revisiting the TMDL, that's a separate question. And I'm hearing that El Dorado County is requesting that. Is that fair to say?
No, it's not.
Okay, then no. El Dorado County is not requesting that, which is nice. So, again, these questions about how much pollutants need to be reduced, where the pollutants are coming from, those questions, I think, at this point, are settled to the point that they're going to be settled. The TMDL put our best foot forward with respect to that analysis. 10 years and $10 million worth of research and monitoring. We did our best. It's not perfect. These are very difficult things to quantify. We're talking about natural processes. Stormwater runoff is a great deal of variability. We did our best with the TMDL, and that TMDL establishes the ultimate load reduction requirements that this permit implements. I want to talk next about the tools that El Dorado County has referenced. I think when Mr. Clemens referencing the model, he's referencing the pollutant load reduction model. The pollutant load reduction model is based on another U.S. EPA-approved model, SWIM, and that model basically generates hydrology based on a long-term data set, a long-term meteorological data set. As Steve indicated, it's very difficult to measure whether or not that model is actually correct because we're talking about an average annual condition. That average annual condition is based on hydrology measured over an 18-year data set that was the same 18-year data set that was used for the TMDL model. That drives the hydrology. The pollutant loads coming off of the landscape using the PL and the pollutant load reduction model were generated using the same information that was used to develop the TMDL land use runoff concentrations. Then the pollutant load reduction model includes a variety of different BMPs that you can put on the landscape to either reduce volume or reduce the concentration of runoff. So you can either infiltrate the stormwater to reduce the volume to reduce the loads, or treat the stormwater to reduce the concentrations to also reduce the loads. There is uncertainty in that. I won't lie to you. This is a difficult thing to try to quantify and to try to assess and to try to estimate benefit. There's a great deal, however, of stormwater quality monitoring and research, not only in the basin, but nationwide, that supports the tool that we've developed. We've long acknowledged that the pollutant load reduction model is something that we need to adaptively manage, and that is something that is part of the management system, which I'm going to address. The other models, those are the only models that we're talking about. The other tools, the rapid assessment methodologies, the best management practice rapid assessment methodology, and the roadway rapid assessment methodology, are simple field condition assessments, so people can go into the field and say, does the roadway look like it's clean or not? That links directly to the model input. You say in the model, I think I'm going to keep my roads this clean, and therefore the concentrations are reduced, the load estimate goes down, and credits are awarded. How do we know the road was as clean as you said it was going to be? We needed consistent ways to go out into the field and determine whether or not the road was clean. Same is true for treatment BMPs. The model assumes that treatment BMPs function, that there's infiltration rates, or that they're filtering stormwater to a certain degree. We need some way to go out into the field and assess whether or not those BMPs are functioning as we planned. We didn't want to put really onerous requirements to model every drop of water that runs through or collect samples off every roadway to determine whether or not those values are correct. We wanted simple, efficient, and consistent ways to assess those field conditions to link back to those model parameters. Those are not models. Those assessments, however, do link back to model parameters, and those connections between model parameters and those field assessments have been validated with a pretty broad water quality monitoring data set. Can more work be done? You bet. No question. The TMDL management system that has been referenced is not intended to otherwise specifically address these questions of whether the tools work or they don't, or to otherwise integrate them. That's not the intent of the TMDL management system. The TMDL management system is a broader-based policy program to adaptively manage the TMDL as a whole. One of the first tasks of the TMDL management system is how do we wrap our arms around what's going on with the other sources? What is the best way to track and account for pollutants coming off of the forest landscape? What is the best way to assess whether or not we're meeting our atmospheric load reduction needs? What is the best way to determine if stream channel restoration is happening? How do we adaptively manage those variables in addition to the urban runoff piece? The question of adaptively managing these questions of the pollutant load reduction model and the rapid assessment methodologies and the Lake Clarity crediting program are explicitly defined in the Lake Clarity crediting program. The idea that this crediting program is new and was sprung upon the jurisdictions in August is somewhat disingenuous in my mind. We started developing the program in 2008, released the first handbook in 2009, and spent $132,000 of federal money to help the jurisdictions learn how to use that program and provide us with suggestions on how to make it better, how to improve its efficiency, and how to change its protocols. We went through that entire process during 2009 and early 2010. I mentioned the handbook update. That's exactly what that process was driving towards, was an update of that handbook to reflect the changes that the permittees were suggesting. Again, it's not perfect, but the handbook describes a clear adaptive management process to make improvements over time. That all said, if El Dorado County or the city of South Dakota or Placer County doesn't like those tools, there's a very clear process for using other tools. Notice I'm using the word tools, not models. We're not talking about numeric models that must be calibrated or validated one way or the other. The only model in question is the pollutant load reduction model. I haven't heard any of the jurisdictions explicitly say that model is fundamentally incorrect. Most of the jurisdictions have been using that model for over a year now, if not close to 2 years. Again, that model has opportunities for improvement. jurisdictions can suggest changes to that model. And the management system project is intended to take ownership of those tools and describe how we will adaptively manage those tools over time. So yes, there is a process plan to adaptively manage these tools. I don't believe that that process needs to be explicitly laid out before this permit is adopted. At the end of the day, the TMDL findings are not that revolutionary. All it says is that, boy, the lakes seem to have a lot greater transparency before we develop it. Come to find out, runoff from development seems to be causing the lake to lose transparency. We need to do things to better reduce the pollutants coming off the urban area to help improve transparency. We're just trying to come up with a way to quantify that and to track that progress in a more meaningful way. Supervisor Sweeney is absolutely right. We've spent $1 billion in the last 10 or 15 years trying to move our program forward. Part of the problem with that effort was we had no way to link what we were doing to the expected benefit. The TMDL provides us a clear way to link expected benefit from water quality management actions on the ground directly to pollutant loads. Is there a straight one-to-one relationship between constructing a stormwater treatment basin and a half an inch of clarity over 10 years? No. There's a bunch of uncertainty in there for sure, but there is a link there. There's a link to the pollutant of concern and the needed load reduction for that. I think we can all agree that we need to move forward in reducing pollutant loads in the urban areas, and we need a way to track and otherwise quantify that so we can demonstrate, one, that progress is happening, that we're actually reducing loads, and two, that we need more money to do that. Because right now, the resources that have been put forward haven't been linked to water quality benefit. The TMDL, this permit, the crediting program, provides us the opportunity for the first time, and the permittees the opportunity, to directly link their programs to water quality benefit to justify their funding needs. So, again, the notion that this is new or otherwise is needs additional time, I love the concept of being locked in a room with permittee staff for extended amounts of time, because I've done that. I'll do it again, and I'll do it again, and I'll do it again. We work on the permit draft with the permittees well before August. We started sharing drafts of permit sections with the permittees as they were drafted. And look, this is the section we're going to be looking at. This is the monitoring reporting programs we're going to be looking at. All of these things have been developed in close collaboration with the permittees. It's unfortunate that we still have a disconnect in how we think we should move forward. I'm not convinced that additional time is going to address that disconnect any further right now. So with that, I'll happy to answer any questions. Or I know there are a lot of other folks that want to talk about this.
Can I ask one really quick question?
Sure.
The locked room conversation
that's been discussed,
if we were to adopt this permit today, would that preclude that conversation in
no.
the future?
No, you can lock us in the room anytime you like. I tried to make that point in the presentation, but I want to make it again. And it's an important point, and Mr. Sandell raised this question. The permit has a reopening clause. There are also a number of different set areas where we want to check in with the board on pollutant load reduction plans and stormwater management plans and water quality monitoring plans. There's a bunch of check-in points. There's a bunch of opportunity to adjust this permit over time. We just think it's important to get started, but I don't think this permit as drafted is the end-all. I think it's a great starting place, and if as suggested that we need to spend some time locked in a room to further hash things out, so be it.
Thank you.
I think this permit is a dynamic item. It can be changed. It's not locked today exactly what's in there, because you're going to find things. The TMDL, what it's going to be in 2016, is it going to be exactly like it is today? Who knows? I don't think so. But there will be change, and there is mechanisms to be able to make changes. I understand that the board's concern about dollars. I think it's hard to go from $75,000 to $2 million a year. That's huge. That's a huge difference. And I don't know, Bob, can you...
I can't answer that question. I think, around the county staff...
You have to ask me.
Great. One point, again, I want to reiterate is the crediting program handbook includes explicit adaptive management procedures. There's a form in there that jurisdictions can submit and say, we would like to do this differently. Please consider it. And we can make that change administratively in the monitoring and reporting program, adjust that handbook accordingly. So if that means referencing a different model, and again, I use that term explicitly, if you want to use something other than the pollutant load reduction model, great, let's talk about it. If you have another condition assessment you want to use, great, let's talk about it. If you think that the application of that condition assessment can be narrowed and extrapolated, great, let's talk about it. there's a ton of flexibility in there. I think that the perception that these requirements are so onerous and burdensome is they're taken at face value without really looking at the flexibility that the program provides.
Supervisor, at the end, you had a comment. I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
That's okay. I'm Ron Briggs. I'm supervisor of the District 4, which basically is the rural section. I have all of Coloma. I come up to Lake Tahoe. We have the Rubicon and Colson Lake and Pool by the Elmo. And my son is a professor of economics at Penn State, environmental economics. And he's so smart at times, I tell him, you've got to be careful that for those of us who don't think it's a big issue or it's a high-level issue. Mr. Larson reminds me of my son quite a bit. You know, very smart guy. I see why you have him on your staff. But you can sense then our frustration as a county. Every time we ask, we're suggesting that, hey, there's a problem here. We're not trying to be obstetrics. We're not trying to frustrate. We have the same commitment and same desire as you, which is to keep Lake Tahoe clear. And I think we've proven that over the years. So what we're saying is, yes, we do take it literally. We do take it seriously when a permit's there, and then how do we implement? And maybe our staff's off. And if it's $75,000 versus $2 million, I think we hire Placer County 10 times, you know, and that'd be cheaper than the $2 million. But I think our staff's, I support our staff. I think they have our county taxpayer pocketbook in mind. I think that they're diligent. I think that they want to, at the end of the Lake Tahoe Clarity, they want what you want, and we're going to deliver it for you. But this young man is telling you, he has UC Davis reports, he has depositions, he has suppositions, he has all kinds of things. I apologize, I didn't go to college, so I don't know quite everything that he has. But for everything that we are concerned over, your staff is very narrow and has their head down, and they want this to go through. And I think that was clear in what he was saying. And I don't take anything away from him. I, matter of fact, like to hire him because we at times need to stick our head down and do the public's business. And when we know things, and I think you know more than we do in this business. But what we're saying is, yeah, it might have been 10 years, it might have been a couple of years ago, but we've had since August that we've been really, truly dedicating ourselves to how we're going to make this work. And so we're asking you for time because I'm not sure we're totally on the same page. Clearly, there's a disconnect somewhere. There just cannot be a $75,000 cost and a $2 million cost without somebody not understanding. And that could be us. But I'm not convinced at this point in time that I want to give the approval to our staff to implement or fight the permit. I don't want to really fight. Seriously, we've got so many other things to do. But we have packed rooms coming up, you know, 100 people when we're talking about cutting a veteran service office by half time or the seniors nutrition center. And these are really real to us. You know, we're dealing with $170 million discretionary budget, of which $100 million goes to our sheriff. And then we have the other $70 million over there to take care of the rest of the people's business. And it gets down to a real nickel. And so we're not asking you to get a pass so we can not pay for the next 6 months or so. We're asking you for time that we can truly understand the difference between $75,000 and $2 million.
Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Brendan Ferry. I'm a senior planner at El Dorado County. I've spoken before you at the September 15th board meeting, very late into the evening on the North Shore. And I guess let me make an attempt to clarify some of the points that have been discussed, elaborate on them, and also talk about a few other more technical issues. first let me talk about the cost, because I think this obviously something's wrong with one jurisdiction saying $75,000, the other saying $2 million, as we're saying. Those two numbers are not looking at apples and apples comparisons. Our $2 million number basically evaluates our entire program to administratively manage our stormwater program. And we hired a consultant, Nichols Consulting Engineers, last year to evaluate the cost of our program, fully implement the existing permit as we're under right now. That cost that they came up with was $1 million. Okay? As we've said before in our letters, the new permit that we're talking about today essentially is doubling the workload, because the current permit, in its current form, is entirely in the new permit. Everything that we're doing now, we have to continue to do. On top of that, we have to perform all the stormwater monitoring activities, which we've estimated to be between $100,000 and $150,000 per year, per jurisdiction. On top of that is the Lake Clarity crediting program. And that is not explicitly highlighted in the permit. That language is, it's mentioned and talked about, but the details of that program are all contained in the Lake Clarity crediting handbook. So all the administrative burden that we're talking about is not outlined in this permit, so it's difficult to capture for folks who don't know where to go to look for that. But we've estimated that to be equivalent to a $750,000 a year cost, if fully implemented at its full scale, to achieve our clarity, our crediting requirements, excuse me. That's where we're getting our number. On top of that, you have maintenance costs to maintain all the systems, and on top of that, you have all the implementation costs to actually do actions on the ground to reduce those loads. Okay, I think Foster County was looking more specifically at a couple key elements of implementing the new Lake Clarity Credit Program. So those are our cost numbers, and we'd be happy to share that with you. We've talked with your staff about that. Regarding some of the modeling, we do, as we've mentioned in many of our comment letters, have concerns about the models and how specifically the inputs from the watershed model were fed into the Lake Clarity crediting, the Lake Clarity model, excuse me. We know models are only can only be calibrated as well as the data they're calibrated with, and the LCCP model, all the models used approved peer-reviewed platforms as models. However, some of the data points that were fed into those were severely limited, in our opinion. Things that looked at, like the event mean concentration data and other things that were fed into those models, some of those data points were lacking, in our opinion. Now, you put on top of that the pollutant load reduction model, or the PLRM, which we've used extensively. We were involved with that model from the beginning, and it should be stated here that that model was never developed to do what we are doing with it. That model was developed as part of the FEA process, or the project delivery process, in order to evaluate...
What does FEA stand for?
The Formulating and Evaluating Alternatives. I'm sorry, it's another acronym in Lake Tahoe. That model was developed specifically to test different project alternatives to achieve optimal load reduction for a given dollar figure within a certain project area. So it's a pretty project-specific model. What we used it for, and what we were essentially mandated to do in our 13267 order that we were issued, was to use that model and scale it up to calculate our baseline load, our jurisdictional baseline load, which we submitted and which is included in this permit, which outlines our 10% reduction requirement. So that model, it isn't exactly being used for what it was intended to do, and we've stated our concern with that model. And regarding the calibration, from my understanding, I'm not a modeling expert, but we do have modelers in our office. Calibrating a continuous simulation average annual pollutant model is essentially impossible. It uses a 20-year meteorological data set, has event mean concentration data in there, but what it's spitting out is an average annual load. So to calibrate an average annual condition is essentially impossible. And so we have concerns about that in regarding the model. We also have concerns about how that model, as I spoke to you in September, does encourage sweeping actions that we're not entirely sold on that's going to give us the biggest bang for the buck as far as reducing pollutant loading to Lake Tahoe. And we do take some exception to Mr. Larson's comments about El Dorado County not understanding or not wanting to understand how to improve water quality in the optimal sense. We're out there as much as anyone, if not more, studying this, looking at our jurisdiction, focusing on infiltration. We certainly want to do whatever we can do to improve water quality. And we take this very seriously. We've written numerous white papers, which we included in some of our comment letters, trying to understand exactly how these tools work or how they don't, how they can be improved, how they work in between each other, and so forth. So we're going to continue to do that. I know we're all here for the same goal. But talking about the tools, which I'm talking about now, elaborating on that, all of them inherently have their flaws, as Mr. Larson has mentioned, and to a certain degree. We're concerned about those models as they work individually, but also how they work together. And that's what we've expressed in our comment letter. And I know that's one of the goals of the TMDL management system, is to get those tools to work better together. The process right now, and it's been fully admitted, is very inefficient. And we are, in a sense, the guinea pigs. It's going to be placed into a permit that we have to follow all step A, B, C, D, and there are many of them, through a process that's very circuitous and inefficient. And we know that down the road, that process is going to be improved. So we're asking not to be put through this very inefficient process, wasting staff time, wasting money that we don't have a surplus of by any means. We'd ask to wait until that process is fully vetted. So if that can be done by later permit date requirements in the permit, that may be an option on how to get around some of this stuff. Yes?
So how would that process be fully vetted without your participation?
Well, as Norma mentioned, we're not... the TMDL management system contract was flown by NDEP, and I understand they've hired a consultant very recently. I don't even know if it's public information we've been hired. I'm sorry, I'm not privy to those facts. But I understand that we will be engaged through that process. We are to be talked to because we have, as much experience as anyone on how these tools work or how they're intended to work. And so I do think that they will seek our feedback on how to improve that process. I think we'll be involved. I'm hoping. I'm pretty sure that we will be.
So I don't understand how. What is the difference between postponing adoption, working through this vetting process, versus adopting the permit, vetting the process with adaptive management? I mean, it seems to me that they get to the same place.
Well, we have concerns that once a permit is adopted, it's much more difficult to change the permit once it's adopted. It requires, a board action and extensive staff summaries and time and so forth, versus just waiting for things to be fully developed and then adopting a comprehensive permit that's been well thought out.
But you're talking about tools that aren't in the permit.
Well, as I mentioned, they aren't directly mentioned in the permit, with the exception of the BMP RAM and the road RAM. They are mentioned. The other tools are mentioned in the Lake Clarity Crediting Handbook, which is referenced as Appendix B of the permit, which is a fairly substantial document. I'm sure you've all seen it. I'm not sure if you've read through it. It basically lines out the process whereby we can establish credits. We have to take a certain watershed, run it through the BMP RAM, the road RAM, fill out catchment credit schedules, model those loads and load reductions, including load reduction model, run them through the accounting and tracking tool, have conversations with Bob or other regulators on how crediting is working or not working, and ultimately settle on a credit and be awarded those credits. And that process is the abbreviated version. There's a lot that goes into all that, including field inspections, a lot of modeling, mapping, GIS exercises, and so forth. That's just for one catchment area. We have 332 catchments, approximately, in El Dorado County. And one of the permit requirements in there will be to, as Bob mentioned, model all of our projects that we've completed from 2004 to 2011. That is going to involve roughly 40 to 50 catchments for us that we'll have to go through that process using the tools rules as they currently exist in order to do that. There's permit requirements where deliverables are due on March 15th of 2012. That's only 3 months away. And so there's no way that things will be worked out in time before we have to use these things. We essentially have to jump into action almost immediately in order to start meeting the deliverables which are outlined on page 30 of the permit, which are substantial, in our opinion. Some of those things, like the pollutant load reduction plan, which Placer County commented on, is a very significant document. We estimate that will take at least a year of our time to develop that. And according to our county council, we'll probably have to follow a CEQA process, because it will be a document that proposes actions on the ground. And those actions have impacts, we have to analyze them. Also, the permit requires an updated pollutant load reduction plan prior to the Lawn Board adopting the next permit. Therefore, in 2014, we'll have to spend another year updating the PLRP for the next permit term. And that was a fairly recent addition into the permit. So these are very significant deliverables that are outlined in this permit that we've put, you know, dollar figures to, staff time to, that we have concerns about, which tie into my earlier comments about costs. The monitoring requirements are going to be incredibly cumbersome and costly. There's limited monitoring requirements in our current permit. The future permit, what we're talking about today, like I mentioned, the costs are estimated to be about $100,000 to $150,000 per year, roughly. We can save costs if we work together. Working through all that through the regional stormwater monitoring program, which is in its infancy, is going to be very challenging. And we have deadlines next year for submitting extensive monitoring plans on how we're going to monitor our catchments and our BMP effectiveness studies. If we are required to do that and we carry it out, it will be some of the most extensive data sets to date based on our research on BMP effectiveness, especially the Tahoe Basin, and catchment pollutant loading and their effects on water quality. We will be doing some really cutting-edge stuff with this monitoring if we're required to do it. There's no doubt. And I'm saying that toward the naysayers that say that the monitoring requirements aren't enough as they're currently drafted. We feel that they're beyond enough and going to be very challenging for us to tackle.
I think we will take a quick break here. We've been sitting here for 2 hours and 15 minutes, and we'll take about a 10-minute break.